So you got
T'imagines
that,
des
guys?
consoles numériques.
Elisa is touring with the
Pas facile.
president of his country, and yesterday it was 43 degrees, so he said the digital consoles didn't like it that much. And it's in the desert of the north, in the north of the country, and he's sending me pictures so I can display them for everybody. If somebody has a picture from Lethbridge, a snowstorm with the minus 22, please send. I saw the beginning of the storm. It was pretty horrible.
The snowstorm was actually happening. There was like a city bus that broke down, like on Whoop Up, like the main road, like just outside my house. They had to contract like a semi to come pick it up.
I see a bunch of people from Alberta showing their window. Look, Elisa, if you can see. Look, the windows.
Ouais, je vois.
Oh, yeah, Laura. Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's a lot of snow.
Wow. Look at that. Okay, so I guess let's continue with our discussion. So Leonard Menon is a four-year major in digital audio arts at the University of Lethbridge. And I think it would be appropriate to mention your heritage, Leonard. So let's see if I don't get it wrong. So your parents are from Singapore, the Philippines, and India. Is that true?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Awesome. So second generation Canadian. And Leonard is a music producer, a sound engineer, a super good electric guitar player, film scorer, and also technology designer, because he just presented a paper at the AES convention about his active monitoring system with Banal audio. So Leonard will facilitate this discussion with Elliot Bates and Eliza, and he prepared some questions, and I guess we will leave a little bit of time at the end of the session for everybody if you have specific questions. And so Eliza, you speak super well English, so you're going to manage, but if you need me either because you don't understand something or if you need me to translate you. Just, you know, make sense. I will be happy to. Yeah, so please.
Cool. Well, thank you, Amandine, and thank you for having me. This is this has been a really fun time so far, and yeah, I'm looking forward to this chat, and I guess the activities that are happening this afternoon. So I guess we'll just kind of begin. I was just wondering, could both of you, so Elliot and Eliezer, could you kind of tell us a bit about your background, about how you got into audio engineering? So any kind of like internships or past education, like where that kind of happened?
I kind of stumbled into it because I was in bands that needed to make recordings, and we would go into big studios and pay a lot of money, and we would get very bad recordings of our band. And so I didn't like that and wanted to do it better and discovered I could do it better. And it kind of began with that. I had made experimental recordings or whatever as a teenager, but it wasn't really that wasn't like part of my identity. I didn't think or anything like that. Like I didn't tell people I did. I just kind of would play around or borrow a synthesizer from a friend or various things, right? So it kind of just started as a problem. It was very pragmatic. And then the turning point was I was in a master's at Wesleyan University and supposed to being a teaching assistant on a recording arts course that Ron Quivela was running. And 2 weeks into, a week before the course was supposed to begin, we realized that in fact, the entire studio, someone had ripped out the entire patch bay from the tracking room. So we had to solder a 1300 point patch bay or something like this in a very, very long weekend. And I had never done that before. And I was like, all right, well, I've done a little bit, but not that much. So it was, yeah, Heather Dia Jennings, who's a composer now based in Brazil, and I had to do that. And then 2 weeks into the course, Ron got this crazy commission in Germany. And he said, okay, you all take the course. And suddenly Heather and I had to run a whole recording arts course, which we were learning on the spot while the course was going. And so it kind of, you know, it was sort of a crash course for us as it was for the students. We organized stuff into projects and basically got teams kind of producing each other's albums, and it had a lot of fun. And so then it just kind of expanded from there. But no, I never had a typical internship, I guess, or anything like that. It was extremely accidental and haphazard the whole time up until I tried to run my own studio in 99, I guess would be the, you know, trying to do this full time.
I guess you mentioned that you were in bands in the past. Did you have some kind of classical education, like any kind of formal education in music theory or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I had done the piano, childhood piano thing, I guess. I was okay with that. I didn't really like it. It's just what I had to do. Get my parents off the back kind of thing, right? And stumbled through that, and then started studying oud in 92 as an undergraduate, Arabic music first, then Greek, then Turkish music, and then got really, really, really into that, and did study privately with a teacher. But yeah, I studied a bit of composition, so a bunch of different things. Yeah, again, it was, even in undergraduate, I wasn't necessarily planning on being a musician. It was just something, you know, I was in bands and doing stuff, so.
Cool. Eliezer?
I used to be a keyboard player, a very bad keyboard player. So, and I started doing sound by using software to make programmation, because on my keyboard I have, there was like 16 track of MIDI channels to program something. So I started like that. I was at school, medicine school. I don't know how to be a doctor. And I went to Mali just for vacation. The vacances, and I stayed there 7 years long. So I will just resume. I will say it in French. Maybe Ahmedine will translate. Moi, je suis arrivé au Mali pour des vacances. Et je suis resté 7 ans, et c'est vraiment une succession de rencontres qui a fait que je suis devenu ingénieur du son aujourd'hui, parce qu'à la base, je suis allé avec des amis, après nous avons monté un petit studio parce qu'on devait rester quelques mois, 2 ou 3 mois, et après... Amandine connaît un peu l'histoire avec mon passage au studio Bogolan. J'étais pas du tout destiné à ça.
Okay, so he went to Mali with a few friends for vacation, and they met a bunch of people and started a little studio, and they thought that would be for 2 or 3 months, and he had absolutely not planned to become an audio engineer, just to have fun. But then there were a lot of meetings, and he stayed for 7 years. And he said, I know the story, but I will let him tell it. Do you want to talk about your internships, maybe? Tes stages à Bogolan? Ou...
Excuse-moi. Oui, si tu veux, on peut... Ce qui s'est passé, c'est que bon, moi j'avais ma petite structure, je faisais des trucs. C'était devenu plus qu'une passion, c'était devenu mon métier. Et j'ai enregistré un album pour je sais plus qui, je pense vraiment Tadja Kité, je crois, et qui devait être mixé au studio Bogola. Et moi j'ai appelé l'ingénieur qui était là-bas. Ah, écoute, je suis en train de faire. C'est compliqué parce que j'ai des appels.
Yeah, so the internet
C'est
broke
bon,
up,
ça va?
but I can translate what you said. So basically, he had done a project for a specific artist. I'm sorry, I forgot the name. And he the project was going to get mixed at Studio Bogolan. So he called the sound engineer of Studio Bogolan, and that's where it cuts. So I'll let you continue.
Ok. Donc, j'ai appelé l'ingénieur qui s'appelait Yves, qui avait monté le studio avec Ali Farka. Et ce qui s'est passé, c'est que ben, il m'a invité au studio. Je suis allé, j'ai vu, et c'était hyper différent de ce que. Le studio a été hyper cool. Il m'a un peu pris par la main pour que je rentre dans ce milieu-là. C'est un peu long, mais voilà, à un moment donné, il a fallu qu'il vende le studio et il a proposé au repreneur qu'avec quelqu'un qui pouvait être l'ingénieur du son résident. Et c'est comme ça que je suis devenu ingénieur du son résident et à force, voilà, j'ai enregistré des projets avec des artistes plus ou moins connus. Et au bout d'un moment, je m'en sortais assez bien, donc les majors n'amenaient plus. Ils venaient plus avec des ingénieurs, ils venaient juste avec les artistes et moi je les enregistrais. Après, j'exportais pour que ce soit mixé ailleurs. C'est comme ça que j'ai vraiment mis le pied dans le domaine du professionnel.
Okay, so when he went in Bogolan studio, he was impressed because the studio didn't look at all like his small studio with his friends, and the studio, so it was built by Yves Werner, so he's a French audio engineer and music producer, with Ali Farka Touré, who passed, was the most famous guitar player in Mali, and so Yves was pretty nice with Eliezer and show him how to use the equipment. And quickly he started working with him, and then Yves had to sell the studio and let Eliezer be the head engineer of the place. And because the studio had a lot of international clients, at the beginning the clients would come with their own engineers. But after a little while, Eliezer started feeling comfortable enough so that the clients would come just the musicians and not with a sound engineer, and he would engineer all the sessions. And but most of the time he would send a multi-track for mixing back where the people were, I guess.
Cool.
Okay, thank you.
Sweet. Yeah, thanks. I guess yeah, both of them were kind of unplanned to different degrees. That's pretty cool. I guess I'll just kind of move on. So for these as an audio educator, how do you teach your interns and or students like the social context that they may encounter in their professional futures?
Oui, ça c'est très important parce que chez nous en Afrique, il y a une dimension sociale qui souvent est même plus grande que la dimension technique. Ça veut dire que il faut accueillir les gens et les mettre à l'aise. Savoir les mettre à l'aise. Pour beaucoup de personnes, c'est une première. Moi, dans mon studio, je ne fais que du live. Donc, je fais des enregistrements multipistes avec des musiciens qui jouent la plupart du temps en même temps. Et souvent, il faut même faire de la pédagogie, même avec les musiciens. Et déjà, ce que je dis à mes assistants, c'est. Je les enseigne déjà le côté mettre l'artiste en confiance. Parce que c'est facile que la personne se bloque, parce que c'est déjà assez impressionnant d'arriver au studio, de porter un casque. Chez vous, ça peut être assez anodin, mais souvent c'est un événement ici. Et il m'arrive d'enregistrer des groupes de personnes qui ne sont pas à Ouaga, qui arrivent en ville souvent pour la première fois, et qui la plupart du temps rentrent en studio pour la première fois. Souvent entendre leur voix dans un casque pour la première fois parce que c'est différent. Et ça peut déstabiliser. Et souvent s'écoute jouer pour la... Je ne vais pas dire pour la première fois, mais tu vois, voilà, avec ce niveau de réalisme. Parce que la plupart du temps, c'est peut-être filmé avec un téléphone, c'est peut-être enregistré avec un truc. Et s'entendre de la sorte, ça peut les déstabiliser. Et là, il y a des choses qui sont typiques à chez nous.
Alors attends, et si tu peux me laisser traduire ça, après on va aller dans les spécificités. Ok, so I'll try to summarize. So we say in Africa, the social dimension is even more important than the technical one. So he does insist, emphasis on the social aspects with his studio assistants, and he teaches them how to feel, to make artists feel comfortable and welcome in the studio. And he says specifically when people come from out of Ouaga, we have to understand that in this context, it's a very, very new experience for them to hear themselves through headphones with a very high level of fidelity, because they used to be just captured by a cell phone or something like that, you know. And so that is creating a lot of stress or inhibition for those professional artists to come to the studio for the first time, maybe in their life. So it teaches his assistant how to make them feel comfortable with that. And he was about to start speaking about specificities of the culture, so I'll leave it to him. Okay, c'est bon, vas-y, pour les spécificités.
Il faut savoir, par exemple, moi, quand je suis... parce que moi, je fais le solfège, je fais la lecture rythmique, mais vraiment basique, hein, pas évolué, avec des Américains. Et moi, je suis plutôt carré en matière de rythme. Et quand je suis arrivé au Mali, par exemple, quand tu donnes le clic à des musiciens, et ils l'entendent différemment. Le musicien, quand il joue et puis il tape du pied, tu vois, il fait le métronome, mais il le fait différemment que le clic que le citoyen lambda comprend. Et c'est là où c'était intéressant avec l'exposé d'Eliott tout à l'heure, parce que j'ai entendu des choses, des trucs qui ne sont pas carrés, qui ne sont pas répétitifs, comme par exemple un clic qui fait tac, tout. Et il y a beaucoup de musique comme ça ici. Et souvent, il faut beaucoup de tact pour même arriver à enregistrer un projet. Ça veut dire qu'il faut déjà comprendre la logique qui sous-tend leur musique. Parce que si on leur met juste un clic, ils n'arriveront jamais à jouer.
OK. Maybe I'll translate there. Yeah, sure. So he said for him, he knows about symmetric rhythms, like in North America. So he mentioned the music theory of the US that he learned. But especially in Mali, he has a lot of difficulties to help musicians play on a click track. And so he linked this to Eliott's presentation earlier. He was interested to see that there were also this type of issue in Turkey, and because they say even if they play on a click, they don't hear the click like we do, so they don't adjust to the click the same way we do. So he says that you need a lot of psychology to help the musician adapt to the click. That makes sense? Okay.
For Eliott, as someone who is an active engineer in an entirely different culture, How did you approach and interact with the differing social circumstances that you encountered in Istanbul?
That's an interesting one. I mean, I've written about this kind of recently. One of the problems in Turkish studios, but just an interesting thing that everyone has to negotiate, is that in fact there is kind of an intercultural encounter to begin with in the studio, because studio musicians are quite distinct group of people from, for example, engineers or arrangers or the album artists that you might have, or the featured musicians. So often these groups are from different regions of the country. They may speak different dialects of Turkish, or maybe Turkish is their second language or third language, and they might have some fluency, but use colloquialisms from one of the other 46 languages in Turkey. There are a lot of social norms, and it is a very sort of guild, like GUILD, which is sort of a predecessor to like unionized kind of labor, that has very strong social conventions. So a lot of my job was to learn how to inhabit a role that had already been kind of created for me, in a way that it was helpful to the people around them. And there was a lot of learning I had to do, because obviously I haven't worked in these kinds of labor situations in Turkey before. And even laboring in other ways in Turkey would have different kinds of social conventions. So, I mean, you have to kind of approach it with a lot of humility, assuming that you're going to mess up most of the time, and you know, be totally okay with being really brutal critique of everything that you do, and just smile and say thank you, and you promise to do better or whatever you need to do. I mean, and that's actually true in any studio situation, you know, is... we are I think an audio engineer is a servant and a technician, first and foremost. I don't believe that we are the artist, even if we do contribute a lot to things that are a part of what, you know, audiences hear as the sound. I think actually it's useful to maintain that we are technicians, and think of, you know, and social technicians as well as session DAW technicians or electrical engineers or whatever we're doing, right? So that's just my personal, you know, each of you has to negotiate whether you feel that is the way you want to feel that in your life. And there's arguments to be made for the, you know, the amazing virtuosic audio engineer and the fantastic things they can do with the production. I'm not discounting that. But in my experience working in Turkey, the better I did, the more I really had this, had a particular, you know, servant relationship to the artist, to the label, to the arrangers and things like this. The more I embodied that, the better the sessions worked, right? Really, really important. So I can go in and say, look at me, I'm American, oh, I know this stuff. And people might have allowed that to happen, but you understand what I'm saying, Glitter, hopefully. I mean, yeah, and others, and hopefully you figure out how to, you know, internalize that self. Sometimes it's okay to just be like, I am doing what someone else knows needs to be done, and I'm going to do it to help them, and that's my role. And the better I do that, the better I am as an engineer, really. So there's a value to that as well in some situations. I don't know. What do you think?
No, it's that was a good answer, actually. That was really fascinating.
I have a question. For both for Elliot and for Elise. And I was thinking a little bit about, since you guys, you know, I don't really know a lot about Turkey or much of most of the countries in Africa in that aspect, especially music. So I was a little interested in you guys maybe talking about what's the mentality using the artists, in terms of, do you see a lot of tendency to try to preserve the tradition and cultures within the music? Do you see a tendency to try to internationalize themselves, to try to get influences in different countries, travel around the world? Like, what's the tendency you see amongst the musicians?
Je peux répondre à ça. D'après ce que j'ai compris, il dit quel genre de tendance se démarque, c'est ça?
Il dit est-ce que les gens sont plutôt à suivre les traditions ou plutôt à essayer d'internationaliser leur track?
Ce qui se passe spécialement en Afrique, c'est ce que, personnellement, ce que j'appelle le nivellement vers le haut. Mais nivellement quand même, parce que actuellement, avec le développement d'Internet, avec le développement de toutes ces grandes chaînes de télé comme Trace Africa, Trace TV, qui font passer des clips et des trucs, au début, ça a eu un effet super, parce que ça a amené tout le monde à élever le niveau, que ce soit au niveau des clips, que ce soit au niveau des productions audio. Mais le problème, c'est qu'aujourd'hui, le gros souci, c'est ce que j'appelle le nivellement par le haut, parce que tout le monde fait la même chose et ça plafonne. Et ça, pour moi, c'est vraiment une grosse gangrène pour la musique identitaire chez nous. Parce qu'avant, dans les années 90, et t'écoutais du Salif Keita, tu savais d'où il venait. Tu écoutais du Youssou N'Dour, tu savais d'où il venait. Tu écoutais du Mori Kanté, du Papa Wemba, des choses comme ça. Ce sont des artistes, tu vois, on les reconnaissait par leur musique. Aujourd'hui, tu regardes ces grosses chaînes de télé-là qui passent des clips, ils voient des clips africains. Il n'y a plus d'identité. Les gens font la même chose, ils font le même clip, ils font la même chanson, avec les mêmes accords, produits de la même façon, avec, on sent les outils modernes. Tout le monde actuellement, de toute façon, c'est logique à fond, tu as les mêmes trucs. Et ça, pour moi, c'est pas forcément une bonne chose. Les gens ont appris à faire des choses bien, c'est pas que c'est mauvais, mais c'est juste que tout le monde fait la même chose. Et ça fait que y a plus d'âme. Maintenant,
Can I translate? Je peux te laisser traduire ça. Okay. So he said that at the beginning, when people started having access to the internet and the big TV channels in the region of West Africa developed, that was great because the musicians started were like motivated to do better and to learn how to use the new technology and to kind of adapt to what is going on in the West. But he thinks that it was a homogenization of the practices upwards, meaning like they all got to do the same thing. So with an idea of getting better but hitting the ceiling in like innovation and also identity. So he said for him, the problem is nowadays in the past, in the 90s, if you listen to Salif Keita, who is the most, I forgot to mention Salif Keita before, but he's probably the most famous musician who is still alive in Mali. So if you listen to Salif in the 90s, you can tell it's from West Africa. But nowadays, if you watch the video clips of most of the artists he works with, he says it's hard to know where they come from. And he thinks that this identity aspect of the music is getting lost, and some of the soul of the music is getting lost as well. Yeah.
Et ce que je voulais dire aussi, c'est que... il y a deux courants. Par exemple, je travaille avec Bassekou Kouyaté, qui, lui, va être... c'est vrai que sa musique est plus ou moins moderne, mais avec des instruments purement traditionnels. Et il essaie de montrer ça au monde, mais il n'y a pas que lui, il y a plusieurs courants comme ça. Et à l'opposé, tu as des jeunes On peut parler de Sidiki Diabaté, de peut-être Ibawan, qui arrive à faire des choses en faisant de la musique décomplexée, de la musique du hip-hop, ou de la musique tendance, comme on dit, et qui arrive à faire des choses. Par exemple, il n'y a pas longtemps, Iba, il a rempli le stade du 26 mars. Ça, c'est des choses inédites, par exemple, en Afrique de l'Ouest, que des artistes arrivent à remplir des choses. Donc, il y a un peu ces deux tendances-là, des gens qui font de la musique un petit peu moderne et qui essaient de pousser le bouchon un peu plus loin. Et il y en a aussi qui, voilà, veulent montrer ce qui reste de l'Afrique, ce qui reste à montrer. Mais de toute façon, ce que je remarque de tous ces deux constats-là, c'est la diminution de l'écart qu'il y a entre les prods locales et les prods étrangères. Et ça, je pense que c'est l'avènement du numérique qui permet ça, qui démocratise le matériel. Aujourd'hui, je peux me permettre d'avoir une petite carte son qui coûte 100 balles et faire des choses qui sont pas mal avec juste un ordinateur. Alors qu'avant, il fallait toute une installation avec. Voilà.
Ok. Donc, yeah. Ok. So there are a lot of things here, very important things. And so from the discussion before, I forgot to mention, Elisa said the homogenization is also because everybody is using Logic. As you know, right, there's the same sample libraries on Logic. So then he said, okay, there are two trends right now in West Africa. There are some artists like Basekou Kouyaté who will create modern tracks using modern technologies, but still with some African instruments from the past or traditional. And on the other end, there are some people like Sidiki Diabaté, who is a very famous rapper, who is actually also the son of Toumani Diabaté, we mentioned before, and people like Ibawan, who is also a very famous rapper in Mali, who are don't have any complex to do productions that are like international hip-hop productions, and really like using the same type of musical and techniques that we do in the West. And he said that what is very new for West Africa is people like Ibawan or Sidiki are able to fill up full stadiums for shows, and that this never happened before. So it's also going with this culture of the show that was not part of the culture in West Africa. So he said this is the most hip side of the production, but there's also a big trend of people trying to combine the new technology, make it modern, but with some roots of the culture, if I say that. And then he say he thinks that those two trends are really thanks to digital technology. And he mentions that he can do something okay with $100 sound interface. And so that's because of that this is happening right now. Maybe Elliot, you want to answer the same question?
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. You mentioned, Elisir, about place and locality and whether or not you can tell if a recording's coming from Mali specifically and the homogenization that happened. That is part of that. I write about that a lot in my book, but in a different way, because in Turkey, they're aware of a market for world music. And world music is kind of a bad word, because world music in its Turkish translation, dünya müziği, means music without a place. It's music that could come from anywhere in the world. And in Turkey, it's very key, like the songs that that I played today are associated with a place so small that they're a particular village with maybe 30 or 40 houses in it. We know with great specificity in some of these where the song comes from, and there's certain aspects of the vocal performance that have to be preserved. So there is a lot of a concern for losing the local or the place in the recordings. So that balances out anything. The result is that a lot of Turkish recordings have a hard time translating to a international stage. Foreigners may hear the recordings and say, wow, it's kind of weird in the 2.5K range because there was a 20 dB EQ boost there, as a bit muddy in the lower frequencies. And they might, you know, they might, foreigners may perceive technical deficiencies that are actually desired parts of the track. And Turkish engineers and musicians, most of them are not so concerned with changing things on account of those external perceptions. Some artists do, but if you're a rock musician, for example, in Turkey, and you want to be an international rock musician, you'll probably try to get over to Germany to record an album and record in a German studio, maybe with Turkish-speaking German engineers, but you would not record it in Turkey because you would be, you know, the studio would tell you, you need to do this, you need to do this, it's going to sound like this. And a lot of things, decisions would be made for you before you got in the studio. And it'd be a lot of friction if you tried to do it differently. But that ends up preserving a really distinctive sound. I can tell within 2 seconds if that recording was made in one of these Istanbul studios. They have a sonic signature to them that's really... it's not natural, but it's a distinctive production style. You can hear the architecture, you can hear all that sort of stuff. So yeah, Turkey is interesting. Some artists think that they want to go big, but then when they do tour, if they get a tour, then they realize that that's not always what they thought it was going to be. And then they stick to, you know, Turkey.
Thank you so much, guys. That was great, great answers.
Elisa, est-ce que tu veux que je traduise ce que Elliot a dit?
Oh, oui, j'ai compris un peu dans les grandes lignes le fait que la musique enregistrée en Turquie a une sorte de signature.
C'est ça. C'est en fait
c'est
que...
pareil ici aussi, à peu près. Et ici, ouais. Oui, je t'écoute.
Non, j'ai dit c'est Allô. Il y a une sorte de signature des ingénieurs du son, des techniques, ouais. Et tu disais ici aussi.
Ici aussi, c'est le cas entre, tu vois, par exemple, les musiques venues du Nigeria. On sent que ils ont une culture un peu plus british. Ils ont voilà, une manière d'aborder le son. C'est différent, par exemple, du coupé décalé qui vient de la Côte d'Ivoire. C'est différent de... Et comme il l'a dit, c'est possible, juste en écoutant la piste, même pas en sachant qui chante ou pas, savoir si c'est une prod nigériane, une prod ivoirienne, ou une prod locale, ou une prod malienne. Et, parce qu'il y a des... Il y a des codes, il y a des façons de sonner dans ces différents types de musique-là. Mais après, on va arriver sur la question des logiciels, je pense, parce que j'ai vu dans les questions. Mais par rapport à... Il y a des choses qui sont passées chez vous, qui sont hyper d'actualité ici. Par exemple, la guerre du volume. Mm. Ici, je me tue à expliquer. Au gars, mais c'est qui sonnera le plus fort, c'est au détriment de la dynamique, de tout ce qu'il y a comme chose. Et comme je l'ai dit plus haut, c'est vraiment le système des les gens font ce qu'ils peuvent avec ce qu'ils ont. Mm-hmm. C'est plus facile avec la numérisation. Mais on va voir plus tard que c'est toujours pas facile ici.
Okay. So I had forgotten to translate before. Elisa had said that he thinks that the gap between the quality of Western productions and West African production has been reduced lately. So I forgot to say that. Now, in response to what Elliot said, he said that there's also sonic signature in every single country or locality. Like, let's say, he said the Tuareg sound of Nigeria is, he can recognize this right away, whoever the singer is. And it will be the same to know if the production come from Ivory Coast or come from Mali or come from Burkina. And then he said, what is also interesting is that some trends that are passed in the West, such as the Loud Nest War, are right now a big deal where he is. And he says that he is exhausting himself to explain to engineers how this is, restraining the expression of the dynamics, all the stuff we know about the loudness war. But they kind of need to go through that. They kind of need to do this loudness war to then understand the problem, if I understood right what they wanted to say. And so he say again, we have to remember that in Africa, it's System D, okay, so what I explained before, right? So they have to make things with what they have, and the limitations are still pretty huge. And so he was also linking to Leonard, your next question about the software. So I think he wants to hear that question, if I got it. Yeah.
Cool. The exclusivity of a DAWS programming can require engineers to adapt and create around the Western context in which these DAWs are all built. So what have been some of the more notable situations that you have had to overcome, or some of the challenges you've had to overcome within the DAW trying to produce this type of music?
Déjà, il y a un truc, j'ai déjà fait un mail à une petite anecdote à l'équipe de Steinberg, parce que ben, juste avant le boom de Logic, et je pense que le boom de Logic s'explique par le fait que on peut juste le craquer avec un mot de passe, ce qui n'est plus le cas avec Steinberg. Et en fait, j'expliquais que beaucoup de studios ici utilisaient Cubase, et ils utilisaient une très vieille version parce que c'était la dernière version craquable qui était sur le marché. Et le problème, déjà, c'est l'accessibilité. L'accessibilité, pourquoi? Parce que par rapport au coût, parce que les niveaux de vie ici ne sont pas pareils qu'en Occident, mais aussi même par rapport à Internet. Internet reste un luxe par chez nous. Et pour revenir à sa question par rapport à comment les logiciels influent sur la musique, tout à l'heure j'ai parlé de Logic. Les gens, ils tournent sur les mêmes logiciels, avec les mêmes banques, avec les mêmes possibilités. Ils ne cherchent pas à faire plus que les fonctions de base, en fait. Et c'est pour ça que les prods aujourd'hui ressemblent beaucoup à du copier-coller. Parce que quand il y a une tendance, quand il y a un truc qui marche, on va voir que dans tous les pays autour, les gens vont se mettre à produire des choses dans ce style-là. Et c'est pour ça que je dis que ça manque d'âme, parce que comme ils utilisent les mêmes outils, ils se retrouvent à avoir aussi les mêmes limitations.
Okay. Okay, so he said that, so to answer Leonard's question, which was the end of the answer, I'll start with that. He said that because they use Logic a lot, definitely there's a problem of using the same banks of samples that come with Logic and the functions, the basic functions of Logic. And because of that, he thinks that's what creates this homogenization of the sound and the type of music they produce. And they also encounter the same limitations than everybody else with the software. But before you say, well, before Logic became the big one, and the reason why Logic became the big software in West Africa, it's because it's now very easy to crack. You can hack the software with just a code on the internet. when before they would use Cubase. It's a very old version from what Emmanuel and I have seen. It's mainly Cubase 5, so we're going back to the late 2000s. Because it was super easy to share it, and it was actually something Stanberg, the company who built Cubase, was doing on purpose, letting people use the software for free so that then they will buy the new versions. So a lot of people in Africa started with Cubase, and at the end of that period, Elisa had written an email to Stanberg, to the company, asking for them to make the software accessible for people in West Africa. So in many different ways, there's a problem with the pricing because the currency level is absolutely not the same as it is in European countries or North America, but also so that they could actually download it on the internet, because internet is still looks, it's not accessible for most people. And also the unconscious problems of bandwidth, right? So they need something that is lighter, or a system where they could actually download it. So they get to those kind of problems. So he had emailed Stanberg, and I checked, because I took some notes this time, trying to not forget things. But I think I mentioned what the main stuff. And one thing I need to specify is I had invited one of my colleagues who actually was an engineer at Stanberg before he got his full-time position in academia. And I think he got a bit scared, so he didn't show up. But I hope, Elisa, that we can organize a meeting with him. Okay? Like, j'avais invité un collègue à moi qui travaillait à Stanberg au temps où tu as écrit cet email. Et je voudrais que vous vous parliez. Mais il a eu peur, je pense, il n'est pas venu aujourd'hui. Yeah. Mais voilà. OK. Yeah. OK, that's it for me. I leave you, Elisa, or Leonardo, Elliot, I don't know.
Cool. Yes. So I guess, because I think we're running kind of tight on time, correct?
Yeah, I think so, we should wrap up soon, but I'll let you finish.
Yeah, I'll kind of go on to the, I guess, the end questions that I kind of had for both of you. So taking the creative workarounds mentioned, like just now and earlier, such as, you know, detuning a few strings of the Cura because it was an E, do you think there are limitations when using your current DAW as an educational tool? Like keeping in mind, like, these workarounds and how they were created, and how that itself is kind of like a very intelligent process to do something like that. With that in mind, do you think there are limitations with your current as an educational tool? And if so, please elaborate.
Le moi j'utilise Pro Tools et Cubase. Donc Cubase et Nuendo. Mais c'est deux faces d'une même pièce. Et le gros souci que j'ai, c'est que moi j'ai des versions récentes. Par exemple, pour Cubase, j'ai la dernière version. Pour Nuendo, Nuendo par exemple, ça coûte genre 2 ans de SMIC au Burkina. Tu vois, c'est hyper cher. Et déjà, nous, je vois par exemple que quand tu vas sur le store de Pro Tools, on peut l'acheter en tant qu'enseignant à des prix réduits. Je vois qu'il y a des écoles par exemple qui peuvent acheter 10 licences ou 20 licences pour choses. Et le problème qu'on a chez nous, c'est que comme les gens n'ont pas les moyens, moi, je me retrouve en tant que professeur avec un truc qui est à jour. Et eux, ils ont Cubase 5. Avec le software. Si tu as le dernier software, tu ne peux plus installer une ancienne version. Et c'est ça, pour moi, le plus gros handicap, déjà, c'est ça, l'accessibilité au logiciel. Donc, on se retrouve à faire des formations qui, pour moi, ne sont pas très utiles parce qu'il y a des outils. Je vais leur expliquer, ils vont baver dessus, mais ils ne l'ont pas.
Oui, OK. C'est ça.
Pour moi, le plus gros problème avec les logiciels, c'est ça, c'est l'accessibilité.
Oui, OK. So he said the main issue for him as an educator about DAOs is the accessibility for his students. He said that, for instance, he has really recent versions of Cubase and of Nuendo, and he knows that his students only have Cubase 5. And so he says that it's complicated to teach. It's even irrelevant sometimes to teach because he knows they don't have access to the software. And he said that he saw on a Avid website that some schools, as all schools, can have educational licensing for Pro Tools, and that we can have 10, 20, etc. license, and that it's not possible in Burkina. And so he said that's a big problem. So, I mean, I'm not translating. It's just part of the project I'm running. And actually, I should mention to everybody before we end that this is funded by the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, this project, and it's an exchange between our West African project and Canada. And also Emmanuel Olivier is directing the French West African partnership that is also included in all this research. And part of it is to facilitate those issues. So I hope that Eliezer can come to the Audio Engineering Society Fair hopefully soon when COVID-19 restrictions are lifted, and so that he can talk to the people who do those deals and we can set up something so that people in his country and students can access a student license of those software for Pro Tools, for Cubase and all of them at a decent price. And that's part of the project to also like give access. So Elliot, please feel free to answer this question, and then I'll let Leonard closing.
Sure, I'm in sort of an interesting situation at the moment because I'm not primarily teaching in an audio technology or an engineering or a production program, but I do in quite a few of my classes. I do teach DAW stuff. I always use Reaper for teaching with students because students can download it for free, and it works fine. Yep, exactly what you said, Chris. A DAW like Reaper. And the other thing is that some of my students have funky old laptops, and it tends to kind of run okay on it. So they're not getting frustrated with it stopping working. So I found that to be fine. But I also I've learned that it's a really ugly and really horribly designed interface. On the flip side, it has the problem that it's been a crowdsourced idea fest. And if anyone ever came up with an idea, you know, one of the developers threw it in there somewhere in a menu option. So you get far too many options there. It's an epic fail in interface design. So part of what I need to do is try to provide a gentle introduction so that it feels like a friendly way in. So I come up with tutorial materials of like, here's your first, you know, here's how you can do things, turn off the grid, drag an audio from your iTunes folder or wherever, and just start playing around and try to make it a playful process that minimizes the unpleasantness of the interface. The other thing that is tricky is to try to, you know, because the first period can be very, you know, people are very impressionable when they're learning about this, and they may quite quickly determine that some things are right and some are wrong, right? And for the students I'm teaching, in some situations, I don't want them to make that conclusion so early. I'd rather them to be able to feel that they can experiment, and maybe the mix is clipping, or maybe it's unbalanced, or whatever they're doing. And maybe that's exactly what it should be. So part of the challenge is, how do you teach this is how you use a tool while also at the same time saying, don't follow any of my instructions at all. I want you to have fun in learning it and play around, and maybe you'll discover something really cool. And if you get stuck, call me and I'm happy to help, you know, at that step, kind of a thing, which is not a normal kind of way that technical tasks are taught. So it's a weird balance, because I mean, you want to give enough that they're that whoever's learning the DAW for the first time is feeling like that they're getting a result they're happy with, you know, that they're excited about in one way, or if they feel is what they want, but not so much that they feel that they need to replicate the conventions of, you know, something that they saw on a YouTube video or read about on a web forum or something. Yeah.
Right. Mais le problème ici, c'est que Reaper, il a soulevé un des trucs. Il n'est pas très beau, il n'est pas très attractif, même si tu peux loader des skins. Et l'autre truc, je pense que c'est le fait que les gars ne sont pas très chauds à l'idée de réapprendre un autre logiciel. Ce qu'ils veulent, c'est quelque chose de fonctionnel tout de suite, et c'est vraiment ce que Logic apporte. Pour moi, Logic, je ne suis pas en train de faire la publicité de Logic ou quoi, mais je vois ce qui intéresse les producteurs chez nous par rapport à Logic. Quand tu charges un instrument, il vient déjà avec tout un tas de presets, avec déjà de la compression, de l'équalisation, de la reverb même souvent, et le mec, il n'a plus à faire ça. Ça veut dire qu'aujourd'hui, on a plein de gars qui bossent dans des studios. Si tu leur donnes un projet à mixer, ils ne peuvent pas le faire. Par contre, ils peuvent composer, ils peuvent même faire des choses qui sonnent, parce que en composant, ils choisissent l'instrument avec l'effet, avec tout ce qui... et même les voix, ils ont des sortes de presets, creamy voice, machin, je sais pas quoi, où il y a déjà tout un tas de trucs. Mais si tu lui donnes juste une voix, il ne saurait pas te dire, oh, il faut que je règle le threshold du compresseur à temps pour régler ce souci. Lui, tout ce qu'il sait faire, c'est sélectionner des presets jusqu'à trouver ce qui lui plaît. Et ça, je pense que c'est une nouvelle façon de bosser. Qui va bien falloir prendre en compte, parce que ils arrivent à faire des choses qui sont pas mal avec ça, et je pense que c'est ça qui fait que je vois que même les autres logiciels comme Cubase et tout ça commencent à mettre des loops, des banques de sons un peu pour pouvoir exister face à Logic, parce que c'est impressionnant. Et c'est ça la plus grosse star de Reaper, le fait que de manière native, c'est difficile de faire de la programmation. C'est un peu usine à gaz.
Okay.
Tellement les possibilités sont énormes.
OK. So yeah, Elisa said that indeed Reaper is free, but as Elliot mentioned, it's ugly and not attractive. And the problem is for his students is it would mean learning a lot of things, because when they know how to use Cubase and Logic, Reaper is, so he said usine à gaz, so it's like a gas factory. So it's a French expression also to say it's complicated and you have to set it up yourself. As it comes without all those presets and templates that Logic has. So it can be about loops, instruments loops, as we know. But it can also be about the EQ compression and vocal effects that Logic give you as presets. And he said that some engineers, where he is, could not mix a project that would come in a DAW like Reaper at all, because they don't know that they need to set up those things. When like they used to those Logic or Cubase sessions, when all of this is already there, and so that's their way of understanding the project task, which I think it's very fascinating, because we have talked about intelligent music production with Kirk on Monday, and some, I don't remember if it was students or professors, but there's always this fear of the technology becoming too intelligent to a point that it's stealing our jobs. But I think the perspective from West Africa is very interesting, because a lot of people learned with intelligent software that can do a lot of things by themselves without you deciding. And because we have learned all those criteria, and Elisa learned them too, you know, it's possible to criticize it. But from people there, it's actually needed for them to work. So I think it's really, really interesting. I would love to continue doing that, but we have another session at 1 p.m. here in Pacific time, which means very late in some places. So I would like to stop here and thank Elliot and Elisa and Leonard for presenting today. And thank you, Kirk, for letting me organize this risky session in terms of internet time lag and all of it, right? So yeah, we on different time zones, sorry, is that tricky? And thank you, yeah, thank you very much, everybody, for staying with us despite some technical difficulties, but I think we learn a lot, right? So, and yeah, thanks again. And Elisa, merci beaucoup. Merci.
Allez.
Okay. Great, thank
merci
you.
Merci Emmanuel aussi de great. Nous avoir rejoint.
Thanks so much, Amandine and Kirk, for convening this for, I think, a really, really fun session. So thanks so much for having us.
Cool. Thank you.